Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
Here we are with another edition of the Gator Panel, and a great time to get together with all of our normalcy hijacked right now, but Gators Breakdown, Stadium and Gale teaming up once again for Gator Panel, and everybody just kind of introduce yourselves here and start with Dan Thompson of the of Stadium and Gale podcast.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for putting this together. It's Dan Thompson, Stadium and Gale.
We got going around Zach Albaverde. Zach, what's going on, man?
What's up, everyone? Zach Albaverde from the Locked On Gators podcast and the Tailgate on ESPN Gainesville.
And Graham Hall.
Hey, Graham Hall here with the Gainesville Sun. Thanks for having me. Always a good time. Bunch of good guys here. I hope everyone's doing well out there.
And shout out to Cam, too, for helping us put this together. Cam, what's up, man?
Yeah, guys, crazy times we have. What are you guys doing to pass the time by?
I played teacher a little bit this morning, you know. So I have a 6-year-old daughter who, kindergarten is not in the plans in a physical form anymore. So now we have this virtual learning. So for about two and a half hours this morning, playing teacher for a little bit.
I got to say that, you know, like there's two types of quarantine. There's people like me who, you know, we just got to stay inside and not go to bars. And that's easy. But there's people like you and a whole bunch of people out there who, that means your kids are home and you got to find consistent stuff for them to do. I mean, quarantine can be tiring right now. I can't imagine.
Yeah, we'll make the best of it. You know, I got to have to put a good face on for her, not to keep all this stuff away from her. But, the real work job every other day. We're in the office one day, at home another day. So vacation time right now, I had already planned. But, we'll get through it. What about the rest of you guys?
Man, I'll tell you, I'm struggling. I'm on day three of this quarantine, and I don't really know what to do. You know, I like to get out. I like to be out, be social. But it's tough. But, you know, I think it's good. I think it's good to unwind, relax, connect with your inner person. Figure out what you like, right? Find hobbies, find something to do. Hey, it's a good opportunity to figure something out, you know, whether it's reading or challenging yourself. Just don't sit around and watch TV all day. I mean, you can do it. I'm not that. Who am I to tell you what to do, right? It's your quarantine.
I think we'll find out a lot about ourselves and other people out there.
Man, I can't wait to figure out what I find out about myself, because I used to travel for work all the time, and I traveled mainly by myself for about 2 years. And I thought I knew a lot about myself. I'm 3 days into this quarantine. I'm like, man, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't know about myself that I'm trying to find out right now.
What about you, Zach? Is Zach on mute?
Okay, I'm back now. I'm back.
Oh, there you are.
There he is.
I'm back now. No, I mean, honestly, man, like I'm used to being at home with the kids. I think that the thing that's been the most difficult is just like you're limited in what you can go do with them. Like you can go take them to, you know, a creek or a field or lake or something like that. But like you can't go inside. You can't go to a movie. You can't obviously take them to a game or anything like that. So that's just being, you don't have so many options. So after a while, just you run out of things to do. So, and that's going to be like that for the next month.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, with that, we all had some time. So it was a perfect time to put the Gator Panel together back again. All the Gator fans out there who will listen to all of our podcasts and read all of our articles out there, of course, we'll be craving content for right now. So, shout out to Uncle Silk too. Can't make it tonight, but he's the one helping us put all this together as well. So big shout out to him as well. Wish we could have him on here. But guys, not only has our normalcy been hijacked, what we cover in all these media forums that we do, or is this Gator football team, all the other sports as well. But when we all come together, it's usually for the sport of football. And it was announced yesterday, of course, officially no spring football game for the SEC, and especially for the Gators, what was scheduled April 18th. A little bit of glimmer of hope. We don't really know anything now as far as, you know, there is no practice, no spring practice until at least April 15th. But, I mean, for a Gators team that had a lot of high expectations or has a high expectation from themselves and from media around the country, There's gonna be some advantages and disadvantages, I think. But Dan, we'll start with you, man. What was your initial takeaway of really no spring game and probably not looking likely for a spring practice either?
Yeah, no, it's a tough situation. I feel bad for the players, you know. And you know, we often think of players as robots, and you know, you often don't think about, you know, this is their. They have four opportunities, maybe five opportunities at most, unless you're one of the patch-in kids, and then you get seven or eight opportunities. But, you know, you only get a few opportunities for spring. And this is a time where you can really, you know, help develop players, grow players, really finesse your craft. And I feel bad for those guys because this is an opportunity for them to be around, you know, the players that they love, playing the sport that they love. And, you know, a lot of these guys won't make it to the NFL. So, you know, they have a limited opportunity to continue to play the game that they love. And it's sad. It makes complete sense and in total sense. And I 100% agree with the cancellation of spring ball. But, you know, this is the opportunity where, you know, your youngsters really learn to grow into their role. And it's sad. But, you know, sometimes the greater good, well, always the greater good is going to outweigh. But it's sad just because, you know, you feel for these guys that, you know, only have a few opportunities to play.
But you, Graham.
Yeah, you know, on top of the competition and football being the only thing I think a lot of these guys have really ever known this time of year, and being the culmination of everything that they worked for throughout the off season to get to this point, that disappointment on top of it, you know, this was really a critical point for Florida on the recruiting trail. I was saying to someone earlier that, you know, thank God for that junior day if you're Florida. Because we really don't know when teams are going to get a chance. And with the evaluation period coming up in the middle of April here in a month, you know, Florida's already, like every other program, going to miss out on two huge recruiting weekends on top of that. So, you know, all of that combined with Dan Mullen's speaking tour being canceled, which, you know, I know we don't think about that too much, but it is a great look for the program. Someone who is charismatic as Dan Mullen going around and talking about that Gator standard, that does help the program when it comes to their fundraising efforts. So everyone is feeling it right now all around. There is not one area of the football program that's not, you know, suffering from a development phase right now and future development when it comes to getting that, you know, number one class that they're aiming for right now.
I think that if you look at it from a positional standpoint, we can talk about a lot of spots where guys would have definitely benefited from being able to go through spring ball. But I think more for Florida as a program, where they were at going into year three under Dan Mullen, and also where the rest of the SEC is. And, mm-hmm. you know, I guess some other teams are also now at a disadvantage as well. But I think coming off of the offseason that they had with Nick Savage, and judging by the results on Twitter, a bunch of guys looked like they got jacked up. I think it was just another step for Florida to not only kind of get ready for the 2020 season, but maybe I think widen the gap on some of their other competition in the SEC, and then close the gap even more on schools like Alabama and obviously schools like Georgia. So this, you know, I guess halts that a little bit. Again, it's across the board though for the SEC. So everyone's not practicing, but I feel like of all the teams, Florida's probably set up as well as anybody to really make a move in the SEC this year and be a championship contender, maybe more so than teams that haven't been in seasons before. So all of that, I think, plays into it.
Yeah, that was something Silk and I brought up. I brought it up last week on the podcast, and I saw him tweet about it as well. I mean, you look at Florida and where they're at, and kind of to extend off your point, Zach, with you know, almost the entire coaching staff returning, except for the tight end coach, you know, Brewster coming in, there. That's really the only coaching change there. But do you look around the SEC and look at the school out west, FSU, and complete staff change, everything, you know, staff change, culture change, everything going on there. But Georgia having to replace Fromm and a few offensive linemen, DeAndre Swift, still got a lot of questions at the wide receiver position, bringing in a new offensive coordinator as well. LSU doing the same thing. Joe Brady goes. Joe Burrow's gone. Lose some key playmakers on offense as well. You know, that's two of the toughest games on Florida's schedule next year. Mm-hmm. And FSU, your big rival out west. And, you know, there's a lot of questions. Those teams really needed a spring. You're not saying Florida didn't. I think there's varying degrees of what, you know, the disadvantage is of missing a spring ball.
Absolutely. And we had two of the personnel guys on Stadium and Gale this past Tuesday. We were talking to them. There is no ability for coaches, that includes training staff, personnel staff. They can't talk to these guys at all. So if you're trying to install a new offense, a new defense, you know, you have a completely new coaching staff, you know, you are really, really hurt by this. Now, sure, there's an opportunity for you to pick up and learn the playbook, but all of this stuff has to be done on your own. And this is where, you know, it's really important for leaders to step up. You know, but now a lot of these campuses are closing down, or students are being asked to go home. They're not mandated, but a lot of them are. And so this is really an opportunity to see who those guys that are committed to winning and who the guys are that are committed to, you know, just playing football. Right. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what the college football landscape looks like next year, because we don't know when football might be played again. Mm-hmm. And I hate to be a doomsday guy, but there could, and I don't know what percentage, 30% chance that there is no football next year, period, yep, next season. So, you know, this is an opportunity for you know, your leaders to step up. You know, and Florida has those guys, you know, at quarterback, at running back, at wide receiver, at tight end, at offensive line, at defensive line, linebacker, and in the special teams, you have leaders that hopefully you can count on. So I'm not sure that there's an area that Florida doesn't have the leadership to be able to say, hey, you know, this is your playbook. This is a strength and conditioning schedule for you. This is what you need to do to stay on top of your game going into next season.
Graham and Zach, I don't know where you had Florida pegged going into next year, or if you've even made that decision yet, but if we don't have a spring, and I brought up those examples of those other teams that have with what they're having to deal with, do you think missing a spring benefits Florida more so than those other teams? Would it put you solidifying Florida winning the East if that's where you put them, or are they kind of status quo? Does it help Florida here?
I don't think it helps Florida or any team by any means. I think that third year for any program is critical, especially for a team like Florida that has, I think, some answers in its ranks, especially at wide receiver, especially in the secondary, at running back. And it's an offensive line that, you know, we talked, I think, a whole lot last year about the trial by fire and having to learn on the job that the offensive line was undergoing at Florida. And that was a big jump expected in the spring. And, you know, that group needs that healthy competition. This is, by my count, you know, what, 15 scholarship offensive linemen and several preferred walk-ons who may end up, you know, guys like Mark Pitts, who were top 100 linemen in the class last year. So I don't think it behooves them to not have that at all. But like I said, we're really in uncharted waters. I could see if this, you know, God forbid, if this does, like Dan said, cancel the season, you know, obviously safety first, but I could easily see, if we are okay by summer, the NCAA allowing teams to hold organized practices behind closed doors. I could easily see that. The University of Florida did say that right now, again, uncharted waters, but they do plan right now for Summer B to be in person. Yesterday, announcements said that Summer A through C would be all online, but they said that Summer B may be in person. So there is a chance that if everything's going better by summer, Florida reconvenes and tries to make up for lost time, but I really can't see it right now. I'm kind of siding with Dan, and I just don't know what will happen, but I don't think anyone right now is thinking that it's a good thing, especially someone like Dan Mullen, who knows how critical that year three is for a program.
Yeah, but to play Angel's advocate, I mean, I would say the one thing that you have to like, and Dave brought it up, was where the staff is at. I mean, the fact that Florida, yes, they have Brewster added, but he's worked with Dan Mullen before. I think that's going to be a seamless transition. So I think from a coaching standpoint, and if we go back to Kyle Trask and we go back to the quarterback position, and I've talked about it before, but it's the most important position of all in all of sports. And I understand that other schools recruit and what have you, but Alabama, LSU, and Georgia all have to replace their starting quarterbacks. And now those guys aren't going to be able to go through spring. And I still like where Florida is positioned heading into 2020 season, even though they have those questions that Graham mentioned, especially at the offensive line. I think that this was probably, of all the position groups, probably most hurtful on them, because they were going to really have to kind of try to take that next step so Florida could be better offensively, or maybe more balanced, should I say, And Hevesy talked about that this spring was kind of when those guys really make their case for starting jobs, and it carries over into fall camp. So the young guys that were trying to get a starting role, that's going to set them back. But Florida's still got so many other pieces that I think you have to like about this team heading into the fall, if there will be one.
All right, Dan, you want to steer for a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. Great commentary so far. I guess looking, you know, forward, and let's play Angels advocate, like you said, Zach, and assume that a football season is going to get played next year and that we can get through this hopefully quickly and maybe resume practice in the summertime. A lot of our starters have been kind of pegged. I think that there's some question at wide receiver, definitely on the offensive line, maybe a couple of the defensive line, linebacker in defensive back positions. But what position battles are you most looking forward to going into to next season? Zach?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, mentioning offensive line, I think outside of that, Florida starting wide receivers, I think, will pretty much be determined in Kadarius, Tony, Grimes, and Copeland. Who's going to be the next line? Obviously, this is the chance for Rick Wells to kind of show what he's capable of. But I think Florida's wide receiver core and how deep they were was a big reason why Florida was so successful. And if they aren't able to be as deep, and the offensive line doesn't make that jump, they can't run the ball consistently again, and they don't have LaMichael Pirine in the backfield, you know, that could be troublesome. So you don't have Justin Shorter still here. Jordan Pouncey is not going to be able to go through spring. We don't know his eligibility issue. So I'm still, I mean, Dan Mullen is so hyping up those guys that he signed in the previous class, Whittemore and Weston. And we'll see what they do. I mean, but they really needed to go through the spring. So I was looking forward to seeing what they looked like. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I want to see what Brent Cox Jr. is going to look like. I think replacing Jonathan Grenard is priority number one on the defensive side. And yes, I understand CJ Henderson's gone to the NFL and he's going to be a first round pick, but I don't think they're going to have a problem sliding Kyrie Elam in there and maybe shaking around the secondary so that they get the best DBs out there. But you've got to replace that buck position with someone who's going to be as effective as a Ja'Kai Polite and Jonathan Grenard. And Cox was supposed to be that guy. And yes, he's still, I think everyone has him pegged there, but now he goes, obviously sat out this past season. Now he's going to have to go another, you know, several months where he's not on the practice field working with the first team defense on a full-time basis. So that's something that still sets him back, that he'll have to make up for once he can get on the field in fall camp.
I want to jump off to Zach's wide receiver comment, and I find it interesting for Florida's receiver. You know, besides Rick Wells, there's basically two tiers. There's guys who have experience and guys who have stats. And then there's guys who have no stats at all. And I find that interesting, especially if there's no spring practice and you get the highly rated recruits of Frazier's and Henderson coming in. You know, the guys, you know, as we with Whittemore, Weston, and Marks, the chance to make a difference this spring and kind of catapult themselves in behind that group that we know is going to be the starters, you know, they're not going to have as much separation between those highly rated, highly recruited wide receivers. So, you know, I think the tiering of the Gator receivers just in two tiers, and that second tier not being able to have a spring and get the confidence of Billy Gonzalez and Dan Mullen ahead of those true freshmen coming in the fall, I think is a really interesting battle to me when fall camp rolls around, is what can Frazier's and Henderson do with the guys who don't have that second spring under their belt now?
No, I agree, Dave. You know, it's a really interesting situation. I'm curious to see, you know, what the NCAA does with, you know, potential waiver requests, right? You know, with what that looks like. You know, if you add a Pouncey and a Shorter, and I know that Pouncey had some questionable stats at Texas, and Justin Shorter certainly didn't live up to his potential at Penn State. But, you know, those are two guys that can immediately come in, add leadership to that wide receiver room. But like you said, Zach, there's a lot of freshmen and sophomores that you're really counting on, you know, to make an impact, right? And I think the biggest thing that you have to look at Florida for next year at that wide receiver position is, are they going to be as reliable, right? You're losing Freddie Swain, you're losing Josh Hammond, both guys who – you know, practically played with stick 'em on their gloves, right? They weren't dropping anything. You had Tyree Cleveland, who was a guy that you could always count on to make that extra block. This is where I think not having a spring, I mean, and this obviously is going to affect everybody, but this is where not having those extra practices where you work on some of the finesse, you work on the blocking, you work on, you know, some other things other than just your, you know, true nature of your position at wide receiver, just catching the ball. That's where I think that you might see some effects next season, and you might rely on people like a Jordan Pouncey if he can play, or a Justin Shorter if he can play a little bit more, just because they've had a little bit more experience, and guys like Whittemore and Marks and Frazier's and some of these other guys that don't have, you know, as much experience or could potentially be, you know, left behind for at least the start, you know, first half of the season.
Yeah, I really think, you know, the wide receiver drop off there with that second tier is going to be key, because, again, we go back to Weston and Whittemore, because I feel like that's the two guys that Mullen continuously brings up. I haven't seen him mention Marks as much, and maybe Marks might not get the opportunities that I think Weston and Whittemore will on the outside. But, look, I mean, I love Whittemore, 3.52 product, and I think Weston had a really interesting recruitment in how he just was, like, not on social media, never did interviews, nobody knows anything about the kid. But at the end of the day, you're asking those guys who were very, very, very underrated recruits to step into the roles of sure-handed receivers like Hammond and Swain and guys that could do so much like Cleveland. I mean, that's a tough ask for guys who don't even have any experience on the field. So I don't think that that's just an easy transition. And I'm not saying that Mullen is painting it to be, but that's why it was so key for those guys to get on the field this spring.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to jump in there real quick. That's another reason spring is so critical. It's because the loss of guys like Hammond and Swain and Tyree Cleveland leaves a little bit of a leadership void, aside from just a rep void. Dan Mullen last season continuously praised the selfless play of Hammond and Swain, from going out there as captains to not really worrying. And then Tyree Cleveland, who we always saw him, you know, on special teams doing whatever he could. And we talked often about him never really kind of living up to his true production potential while at Florida. That's something that Florida really is going to have to establish. They're going to count on guys like Trey Grimes and Kadarius Toney to step up. And then a lot of unproven sophomores like Zach and you guys mentioned. That's a very tall task for a team that does have, you know, college football playoffs expectations in a sense. They're really going to expect guys like Kadarius Toney to make that leap, because they aren't just coming back to better themselves for the NFL. They came back to make the team better, and that's been dictated to them that they have to do that this season.
On defense, is one I had that secondary, it was briefly brought up there. The two guys I think spring was so important for me is Chester Kimbrough and that nickelback spot, trying to figure that out. And if we were going to see Trey Dean at safety, and, you know, this would him moving back there to safety in a permanent role, spring would have been the first time we would have, you know, seen that. So that's there, because I think we know. Probably the beginning of spring, Mullen would go with the three guys who are returning there, with Steiner, Davis, and Sean Davis. But, you know, we think Trey Dean's going to get moved back to safety. But now, not having a spring, does that slow that down a bit? I think we know outside's not going to be his best shot. We know nickelback's not going to be his best shot. So we'll be playing his third different position in as many years now there. So I think Dean going back to and trying safety would have been, you know, something we would have seen, and something seen this staff tinker with this spring.
Yeah, that's the one spot I think that on the defensive side that people want to see have better play. There's no doubt about it. Fans, and I think even the players themselves want that to be more consistent. You don't have Juwan Taylor back there, so that's going to maybe slow down that rotation a little bit. If I think Dean does eventually start there, that might be Florida's best bet to get their best defensive backs on the field. I'm really excited to see what Amari Burney does at the star. I think that he is the perfect I think it was a South Carolina game where he really got a lot of work there and played really well too. So a guy that was a safety slash linebacker prospect that's got like, you know, sub 4.5 speed. He's just, I think, has all the boxes that you want to check for a guy to be able to play that star spot. So if he can settle in there and be healthy, that's going to allow them with some flexibility with their safety position. I mean, I don't know how you don't have Marco Wilson and Kyrie Elam as your two starting corners. I mean, I know they're going to have a rotation there, but I think that those guys are going to lock down that spot pretty well. But I go back to the buck position. I mean, I'm excited to see Brent Cox, and I think that it's going to be him, but there are so many guys that they have on their roster that could play the buck position that have been working there. I don't think that it's just a foregone conclusion that's going to be him. Jeremiah Moon obviously can play there. You have Mahmoud Diabate. Don't forget about David Reese, who had the season-ending injury before last year. So there's a lot of guys that they can fit in there. And then whoever ends up getting that buck spot, well, then now where do you put Moon? Where you put Diabate? That's all going to have to shake itself out.
And with no spring, that kind of helps Moon a little bit, because if he wasn't going to be fully healthy and had a chance of getting passed over by somebody like Brenton Cox.
For sure. No, and I think obviously with Moon too, he's the type of player that you can plug in a lot of different spots because he's just that freakish-like athlete. But that's going to be their whole MO, is trying to get the best 11 on the field, and they have such a flexible, unique scheme where, you know, spring allows you the opportunity to experiment and to, you know, have different guys in different spots and see who does well. And you're not going to have that luxury as much in fall camp.
Second straight year that you have to feel a little bit worse for Jeremiah Moon than I think some of the other guys, because last year, if you guys remember, he missed spring as well and had a real, you know, chance to play more minutes last season, get more reps than I think that he ended up getting. And the talk was what you said, him and Brenton Cox, along with guys like Zach Carter, were going to be some of the guys for Florida to step into the void left by Grenard and Jabari Zuniga, and to have that pulled out for Jeremiah Moon. That's, you know, it'll be 3 years that he, you know, he may not see another spring in Gainesville. So another guy who absolutely is going to have to hope that, you know, the tape doesn't lie, as we say.
Yeah, I mean, you guys make a bunch of great points here. There's a lot of people that this was, you know, their opportunity. And, you know, there was some key positions open at linebacker, at the buck position, at safety, at defensive back that, you know, depending on, you know, when the schedule starts, and we're obviously talking about a lot of hypotheticals here, but depending on when the season starts, you're almost going to have to say, you know, similar to the wide receiver position, is the ones that you can already count on. And even though there might have been some players that really progressed in the offseason, you know, back in the fall, you know, this is really going to be an opportunity where Florida is going to have to look back and say, hey, you know, even a guy like Brenton Cox, who probably has all the talent in the world, you know, Jeremiah Moon's played a little bit more. Some of these guys know our system a little bit more. And not saying that Brenton Cox didn't learn, you know, last, you know, summer and fall, but it's almost like you didn't play it at game speed, right? You weren't playing, you know, every down, right? So it's going to be a really unique and almost precarious situation that Florida finds itself, and all schools are going to find themselves in, you know, trying to make those decisions. And I think we're in for probably some pretty sloppy football to start the year.
I think two guys that really, and I'm sure that they don't think about it this way, but I'm allowed to think about it this way for them, but that are probably or should be counting maybe their lucky stars that spring ball didn't take place, is I think definitely Rick Wells, and maybe not as much so, but definitely Damian Pierce too. I mean, the fact that Lingard is not going to be able to go through spring ball, that is advantage Damian Pierce. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that obviously Whittemore, Weston, Pouncey, all these other guys not being able to go through spring ball, that's advantage Rick Wells, because even though he's not got a lot of playing time throughout the course of his career, he's still so much farther ahead of those guys. So that's going to, I think, to Dan's point, make the coaches, once they get closer to the season, have to factor that in as to, you know, who they can really count on to put out there on the field.
One more, because I brought it up on Twitter yesterday and it got a lot of pub. Gene DeLance. I mean, I know he got shamed so many times last year, and a lot of people are kind of pointing to these freshman offensive linemen that are coming in, maybe even redshirt freshman offensive linemen like Michael Tarquin, but you know, Ethan White out there too, who got some starts, and Richard Garage, you know, more the younger offensive linemen. But you know, a lot of people were kind of pointing to, you know, Braun and Walker this spring and maybe kind of supplanting Gene DeLance. A lot of people don't want to see him on the field anymore, but now he's going to have more experience than these guys, especially with, if no spring happens. So Gene DeLance, I mean, whether Gator fans want to hear it or not, it may also be another benefactor of having no spring practice.
No, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Zach.
No, for sure. I mean, that's that was the position I led with, man. I really think the offensive line, if we're going to really talk about what hurts this team the most, I mean, they needed that in the worst way for those freshmen and redshirt freshmen and those guys that are really going to be able to challenge. This was going to be their time to show it. Because yes, that happens in fall camp too. But after an offseason with Nick Savage and for the guys that were redshirted this past year, I mean, this is now the time for them to show what they can do. And even the guys that were early enrollees for 2019. So that's going to give, you know, an upper hand to the guys that have gotten snaps before and played reps. I still – where Richard Garage ends up is going to be interesting because mm-hmm. he's still that guy that can play a lot of different spots.
Well, you said it happens during the season, but, I mean, look what happened. And we saw improvement, but, you know, Ethan White didn't get on the field hardly until November. You know, and it took Chris Blyche leaving the program for him to basically to get out there in a starting role. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems like the experience is the route that the staff likes to go most of the time.
And also, I think Brent Hagee too. I don't foresee him. He's a redshirt senior, so he's got plenty of experience at center. He was a center prospect coming out of high school, but at the end of the day, he's still taking over for Nick Buchanan. And him getting the opportunity to, number one, be healthy, and then number two, get all those reps through 15 practices in the spring at center, that's not there now. So that's another thing that kind of sets you back as an offensive line.
Yeah, that's good stuff, guys. What do we think, you know, the last time we did one of these Gator panels, you know, we were able to talk about the change at the defensive line position with David Turner, and obviously I think that we can all say that that's been an outstanding success so far. You know, Florida's making a change, or already made the change at the tight end position, bringing in Tim Brewster. He's already got his two tight ends for the year. What do you guys anticipate seeing out of Brewster over the next few years?
Man, listen, I covered Dalvin Cook's recruitment very closely. Very closely. That dude's a bulldog, man. I don't know what it is. He's almost like, I've never met the guy. I've never talked to him. But he almost gives off like this, like, mafia mentality, man. Like, he's just like this slick talking, you know what I mean? But it's all real, though. Like, you know, obviously, I listened to the interview you guys had with him, which was great. And it's very clear why he's so good at what he does. And why guys want to play for him, why schools have hired him, and why he's developed a reputation that he has. And it's not like he only is a recruiter, too. Like, he's done it from a coaching standpoint as well. And he's you know, moved all the way up and been a head coach. So, great hire. I mean, and I like Larry Scott, and he landed some and won some important recruiting battles for Florida. Did a great job with Kyle Pitts, but I think that we could maybe be looking at this a year from now as an upgrade.
He is going to benefit so much from having Kyle Pitts and Keon Zipper to work with to begin with. And don't get me wrong, he's already an elite recruiter. He's pretty much shown that already in just his short stint at Florida. But I think by the time he'll have Pitts in his arsenal, he'll have Zipper in his arsenal to go out there and show recruits, hey, look, this is what I could do at tight end. And those are guys he didn't recruit, but he'll get to coach for a year. And you know how recruiting works. You know, coaches or players, recruits out there will see, hey, he coached Kyle Pitts. Hey, he coached Keon Zipper, who I'm expecting big things from. So that's why I'm throwing him into this conversation. But you know what we already I can't rehash. Everybody already knows kind of the basics of Tim Brewster and what he's going to bring to the table. But kind of looking ahead and seeing he'll get to coach Kyle Pitts next season and Keon Zipper in years to come. Gage Wilcox has added to the tight end position as well. So I think, you know, in the years to come, and he gets to show he coaches those type of players already, it's just going to me heighten his recruiting even more.
Yeah, I would say that Tim Brewster's greatest impact at Florida, and not to say that he can't already, you know, in the future make a huge impact. I would say that it's already been felt right now coming in the first month and landing two tight ends, two top 15 tight ends in the 2021 class really has freed him up to help everyone else on the trail. And as you guys know, that I think that's his greatest asset as a recruiter is his ability to recruit at every single position. And in a full, you know, a whole slew of areas, Florida certainly needs help recruiting at running back this cycle, various other positions. Not to say that, you know, by getting Dejon Reynolds, that's a huge one, obviously. But Brewster's impact will be felt if Florida, you know, signs a top three, top two, you know, God forbid the number one class. That's, you know, when Brewster's worth every single dollar. And if he develops Keon Zipper into a, you know, SEC tight end and turns Kyle Pitts into a, you know, a second day draft pick, absolutely. That's a cherry on top because it's going to lead to recruiting down the line. You know, and who's to say that, you know, Brewster may not be at Florida for years to come. I know that we already are operating in this mentality that he'll be here for, you know, what is it, 2 years, but that was someone who, you know, saw himself settling down in Chapel Hill for years. You never know. Gainesville is a great place. You guys can all attest to that. You never know what can happen. This may be the start of the end for him in a sense, and Florida will absolutely benefit if that's the case.
Hey, Dan, you guys got to interview him on Stadium Gale. What was your biggest takeaway from the discussion with him?
Yeah, no, we were very, very fortunate. He's an incredible guy, and what I'll say is he's just as genuine just talking to him normally as he is when he's giving his recruiting pitch. He's just a high-energy guy. He's a guy that doesn't have a stranger in the room. You know, he doesn't consider anybody a stranger, probably just a friend he hasn't met yet, right? So that's just the one thing that I thought about him. You know, I always thought he was kind of goofy on the timeline. He kind of still is, right? You know, but I think it's truly from the bottom of his heart that he's just so passionate about what he does and so passionate about what his job is, right? And what we got out of that interview, and frankly, we thought it was going to be like 5 minutes long because he's like, we're in our hotel room, I'm recruiting, all this stuff. We had to chat him for 35 minutes, and what we got out of him, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, and we've been able to interview a lot of great people and some coaches, is that I truly felt that he coaches football because he wants to help kids, right? He obviously loves the game of football, but he really wants to develop lives. He wants to develop character. He wants to develop people more than anything. And I think that that's what's great about him. Because there's a lot of people that do it just for the limelight and for, you know, the notoriety. But the one thing that I saw about him is he's going to be a guy that, you know, truly, you know, cares about, you know, his players. I think he's an unbelievable evaluator of talent. He told a story about how he went to see Antonio Gates when he was a basketball player, when he was a coach for the San Diego Chargers, and was able to help develop him and to be one of the best tight ends, you know, of at least our generation, if not of all time. So that's the one thing that I got out of him. And I'll be honest with you, you know, we've all been fortunate enough to meet a lot of the guys on this staff. And I can truly say that there's a lot of coaches on this staff that are doing it for the right reasons. And that's, you know, Tim Brewster's a great addition to that.
I want to keep it on recruiting for a second. Zach, start with you, man, because your background in recruiting, no spring, no visits, no in-person visits, no traveling. Recruits can't come to campus. How do you see this working out, Dan? I was listening to an interview with Steve Wiltfong from 24/7, and he mentions that maybe in the fall, when all this kind of gets cleared out, that maybe there's just one extra staff member that can go out throughout the fall and go visit in person, you know, different prospects around the country. I mean, not only has the, you know, the gridiron changed, but, you know, the recruiting world itself has changed in, you know, for April, May, and the months coming up.
Yeah, I think one of the things that all schools is going to be impacted by this is, obviously, recruiting is not going to stop during this period. And what I mean by that is prospects and coaches are not going to quit communicating with each other. And whoever's initiating it, it's going to happen on a weekly and sometimes, if not daily, basis. But
does Zach Evans like virtual tours?
Exactly. So, well, but the thing about it is, though, is so much communication typically is usually just, you know, text, DMs, stuff that they send. And there is FaceTime that happens, but maybe not on a regular basis or maybe not with all the coaches. And I think now moving forward, that's going to be something that's relied on a lot more, is coaches getting on FaceTime and trying to have face-to-face interactions even more often with guys. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, I don't think every coach is maybe comfortable doing that, or maybe feels like they can do that all the time and have that type of relationship. So for Florida, I think that based on where they were coming out of junior day with the top class in the SEC, one of the best in the country, the fact that they had this great event that now no other schools are able to try and follow up with, I think Florida's set up for success. I mean, that junior day visit now leaves a lasting impression in the minds of all those guys. And now it's just on Florida to stay hot, to keep that those lines of communication open, get on FaceTime, make sure that they're always talking to these guys. But I think that Florida has the coaches and recruiting staffers to be successful at that. And again, I want to point out, I don't think that everybody does. I think that if Jim McElwain's staff was in this situation and you had to rely on Jim McElwain and his assistant coaches to be getting on FaceTime every week to, you know, keep Florida afloat on the recruiting trail compared to all the other coaches in the SEC that were going to be doing the same thing, I don't know how you feel about Florida's chances with that. I do think that Dan Mullen and most of his coaches are probably pretty good on FaceTime. You know what I mean? And I think that when you're one of the better teams in the SEC and you already have momentum on the recruiting trail, you'll be able to withstand some of this until this recruiting suspension gets lifted.
McElwain's staff would have been jumping in a pool after junior day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Coach Mack was always good to me, but I can't imagine him being on FaceTime with high school recruits as the big sales pitch. That, I mean, you know what I mean? That was just not his MO. What Florida was using as the bread and butter to try and sell kids on UF was, let's get on FaceTime with Coach Mack. However, I think that you can get on FaceTime with Dan Mullen, or get on FaceTime with Christian Robinson, get on FaceTime with Tim Brewster.
Well, who was it Mullen was FaceTiming with at the Peach Bowl on the field?
I'm not sure.
But I mean, I remember that story. There was a recruit out there, you know, he FaceTiming while he was on the field at the Peach Bowl, basically, you know, selling Florida in that event.
And listen, I mean, I can't undersell it. There are plenty of head coaches and assistant coaches that are not comfortable doing this. I'm telling you. So if you have enough coaches that are, and you have a great product to sell, you know what I mean? And the results are good. And it's just, you know, again, I think Florida is in a better position to go through this than most programs.
Yeah, no, I'd agree 100%. I mean, there's very few people on this staff that I don't trust 100%, you know, with recruiting. You know, even guys like David Turner, right? You know, his name hasn't been mentioned yet. You know, John Hevesy, he's got his relationships.
I even think John Hevesy would be good on FaceTime. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, high energy. I've been around him at media when, like, he's goofing off, like, off camera. I think he totally will handle, like, FaceTime and stuff well. So, I don't know, man. I just think there's a lot of personalities on this staff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, going back to your FaceTime, hold on. And going back to your FaceTime thing, I just Googled it for the heck of it. And Will Salmon's article from The Athletic, where he was spending time with the staff on signing day. And just quickly, before I even pull up the article, it says, Mullen just ended a FaceTime call with four-star defensive end Princely Umanmielen. So there you go. I mean, another example for a player that they pulled in on signing day.
Yeah, and I'll give the back office credit too. You know, we've been going through kind of a series over there on Stadium and Gale trying to get really any of these guys on staff. But, you know, between Lee Davis, Charlie Skolinski, Kirby O'Meara, Keewon Ratliff, you know, they've got an operation that's running better than Florida's recruiting department has ever run. And some of that is due to, you know, the sheer size of it and the amount of people and touches that you can have because you have more, you know, bodies that are helping, you know, but they seem between their creative design, between the way that they organize how they're reaching out to players and to prospects, the way that they're working with, and then they have a staff member for every single coaching staff, or a recruiting person for every single coaching staff member. There's all of the workings in place for Florida to now be able to really compete at that elite level. And you've got proven results, you've got good personalities, and then you've got Florida who's on the uprise, especially in an area, you know, the Southeast, where there's not a ton of competition. I mean, you have, you know, both FSU and Miami down. Yes, Georgia's doing well, but they've had, you know, quite a bit of staff turnover. Alabama's had some staff turnover. They're going to recruit well, and so is Clemson. But, you know, Florida is now starting to creep up right behind Alabama, Florida, or Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. And so, you know, you start to win these battles and you know, utilize the personalities that are on this coaching staff. I like Florida's chances. And, you know, with that junior day being such a big deal with the number and sheer number of talented players that they had, the exciting basketball game, even though it didn't turn out the way that everybody wanted. But for all of that to happen before most of these guys could take another junior day visit and probably won't be able to take one until their senior year, you know, I like to think that Florida's sitting in a pretty good chance there, or a pretty good shot.
And Graham, to introduce you here on this topic, I'm going to give Dan Mullen and the staff so much credit because of the upgrades of the coaches that are no longer with the program after Dan Mullen's first year. He upgraded Victorian Gray, David Turner. As Dan said, the behind-the-scenes staff had been retooled ever since Dan Mullen's first staff that was hired. I mean, every move Dan Mullen has made on the coaching change circuit the last, you know, couple of years have been upgrades.
Yeah, it's something that Nick Saban has done extremely well. I mean, even this last year, you saw that Nick Saban was kind of coming out and even kind of complaining a little bit about teams poaching his assistant coaches for head coaching gigs. But that's what you want. You want to hire guys who are going to get, you know, promoted elsewhere, that are going to make it into the NFL, that are going to get NFL interest, that are going to get head coaching gigs interest, whether it's Howard, whether it's Colorado, wherever it is. That's who you want to hire. You know, I said to people a lot that it was kind of, you know, one of the early tells about the Jim McElwain era that really, you know, aside from that Torian Gray hire, it really wasn't a staff that was that desirable in the SEC. You know, the only change that he made was Kurt Callahan. And that really wasn't totally for coaching purposes. You know, as you guys know, that really should have been a tell there right there. You know, Dan Mullen wants guys on his staff to be poached. And one of the ways that you can tell you have the head guy in charge is when they go out there and do what you guys are saying, is they go out there and they upgrade and they get a guy like David Turner, or they get a guy like Tim Brewster. And that needs to obviously continue for Florida. You know, we had a huge talking point, I think even 6 weeks ago, thinking that Todd Grantham would get NFL interest again, and he ended up not getting any NFL interest or any that was at least made public. So having him come back, you know, that was a huge bonus that I think if you had caught all of us 3-4 months ago, a lot of us had kind of been talking about this staff having to replace him, and the prospect of Christian Robinson getting poached by some NFL program, being made a defensive coordinator elsewhere, or if Grantham left, him taking Robinson with him. The fact that this staff, you know, has retained those guys and then upgraded at other positions has put pressure on the other assistants, especially on the recruiting trail and in-house, certainly. But it has made Florida, I think, a desirable place when your coaches do become head coaches, because that's every coach's dream, to become the head coach at some level. And if Florida continually does that, hires guys and set them up for that, they'll keep getting top-notch talent and be a desirable place like Alabama has been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that you have to really applaud Dan Mullen. And, you know, when Dan Mullen was hired and I think we did our first Gator panel not long after he was hired before his first season. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about is that Dan Mullen isn't always going to go after maybe the sexiest hires, but he's going to go after guys that he's comfortable with. He's going to go after guys that he's comfortable with his system. But he's ultimately going to probably have very little staff turnover. And when you consider, you know, in the, you know, going into the third year, you know, Florida has not only had very little turnover, they've been able to upgrade all across the board. And that's a testament to Dan Mullen and his ability to not only recruit staff and retain staff, but to bring on guys that are going to elevate. And I don't think, and I, Graham and Zach, you mentioned it too, there's no position that I don't think Florida upgraded on when they brought in a new coach. I'm almost wondering, you know, between David Turner, Torian Gray, and Tim Brewster, which one was the best hire for Florida? They kind of all bring something different to the table, you know, overall. But, you know, that's a testament to Dan Mullen. And that's something that, you know, we're going to continue to see is that, you know, Dan Mullen is going to probably go after your guys that are comfortable with his system, but also comfortable in the roles that they're in. And yes, there's going to be guys that want to move into coordinator and head coach positions, but there's also going to be a lot of guys that are going to be here for, you know, probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And I almost see this maybe being similar to like a Clemson situation where they have, you know, little staff turnover. You know, that continuity certainly helps. It helps build relationships in recruiting and helps build, you know, camaraderie on the field, and it helps build chemistry with the offensive staff and the defensive staff. So that's one of the things that I'll give, you know, this staff credit for is they all seem to be in each other's corners. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of infighting and disagreement, but they all seem to be, you know, jiving well together and ultimately, you know, breeding a very strong staff right now.
Dan, just to have fun with it, man. I'm kind of just going off the what you proposed there, maybe the better hire. I'm only going to say David Turner because I think in the SEC, you have got to be built in the trenches, especially on the defensive side of the ball in this conference. And with the, you know, the haul he had last cycle and then Tyreek Sapp, you know, kind of, you know, borderline five-star player coming into this class. I mean, I don't think it can be overstated being so good on the defensive line in the SEC. And look, and Brewster's only been here for a month. So, you know, that it's not really a fair comparison right now. But, you know, just to have fun with it when you're bringing it up there, what David Turner's been able to do, and, you know, of course these guys have to go out there and perform. But, you know, based off just recruiting results right now, I think you have to be excited at least for the trenches on the defensive side of the ball for the Gators.
No, mm-hmm. I agree with you, man. I think that if you're talking about the importance of the position and how tough it is to find really talented position coaches at those specific three spots that we're talking about, I don't want to say cornerback coaches are a dime a dozen, but there's a lot of really good ones out there. And Torian Gray's one of the best. And then obviously you look at Tim Brewster, real talented, but there's a lot of great tight end coaches around the country. Trying to find a really good, productive defensive line coach that can also recruit is not easy to find. Interesting, too, if you look at it from this standpoint, I think a lot of fans and maybe a lot of other media folks would probably go with Turner, too, just based on where things are at right now. But what's funny is that if you would have asked everyone this at the time of the hire, I don't think anybody would have went with Turner.
I think, yeah, you know, I was just about to say, Zach, remember he came from UTSA and everybody's like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they brought up some examples of some guys that he put in the league. It's like, yeah, but was he really responsible for those guys? And why is he at University of Texas San Antonio?
And not only that, but then you think about the other hires. Like, you know, he replaced Charlton Warren with Torian Gray, which as soon as that happened, everyone loved that hire. You got Torian Gray. And then you replaced Larry Scott with Tim Brewster. Well, everyone knows Tim Brewster. Everyone let you. So, I mean, David Turner was like the outlier. Yet
he replaced Sal Sceri, right?
Yeah, yeah. Who, by the way, everyone loves Sal Sceri. Yeah. And, by the way, where did Sal Sceri go? He went to Alabama. So it's just like when you consider all that, it's pretty impressive. I think that we would, I think many of us would probably go with Turner.
Graham, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously the impact of David Turner, a guy kind of like Tim Brewster, who he made his impact known early, I think, in the cycle on the recruiting trail, and can turn, I think, most of his attention to developing some of these guys that we haven't mentioned. You know, we've gone this whole time and haven't mentioned guys like Chris Vogel, Lloyd Summerall, those are guys who I expect to be kind of like the Zach Carters of last year, you know, to make a leap on the field this season. And then, you know, circling back to the whole coaching discussion, if Florida is going to be, you know, we're what, 18 months away from sitting here and talking about the facility, the standalone facility opening, and what that could do for Florida's recruiting prospects, I think you are going to have, I think, a lot more what the baseball stadium will do for baseball signability. You'll have the staff retention and getting kids to want to stay maybe until they're seniors in this program a whole lot more. If Florida can become in that 18-month span, catch up to the, you know, Alabama and Georgia on the recruiting trail and then get the standalone facility, I think that we're going to be having a much different conversation here in 18 months, just like what you guys are saying about David Turner, about, you know, how a year from now, a year ago, things were so much different. You know, time is really crazy in the SEC. You better recruit every single day. You better put money into your facilities every single day. And when there's this stop going on right now, when we don't really know when we're going to resume, when, you know, theoretically they could go knock down the baseball stadium right now and start developing, mm-hmm. you know, if they could do that facility and then make that, you know, catch up a little bit quicker to Alabama and Georgia, they could do that. You know, we just don't know. We're sitting here talking a whole lot about theoreticals, and I know that a whole lot of fans out there want that to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you make a great point there, Graham. I guess we're going to leave. I have two final questions. One is, and we'll start with you, Dave. How do you think, what are some hypothetical ways that you think the NCAA might come up with ways to change the recruiting calendar, change the football calendar? And let's just assume that, you know, the coronavirus outbreak has, you know, slowed and tapered off by the middle of May. What are some things that if you were in charge of the NCAA or the SEC, you would do in regard to the recruiting calendar and then the football calendar?
Recruiting calendar, I guess, would start sooner. So I guess as soon as it's safe to, you know, for everybody to feel safe to travel, I guess you can still travel airplane right now if you really wanted to. But as soon as everybody felt safe of doing it, because everybody, you know, bringing up the Zach Evans recruitment and say, okay, he could visit this weekend if there was still available, you know, if the NCAA and the SEC still allowed visits to campus this coming up weekend. Would he still feel safe? Would his family still feel safe traveling? I don't think so. So yeah, I don't think the visit probably would have happened anyway if the SEC didn't come in and say no in-person visits on campus. So I think, you know, we have to get past that to where I think everybody feels safe as soon as everybody feels safe to start traveling, you know, I think the recruiting calendar, you know, starts then. So first week of June, maybe to be on the safe side of everything. And then a month later, I think, you know, for fall camp and how everything goes around there, I think you have to basically start first week of July just to make up for the spring that you missed. And more than likely, I don't think the NCAA would grant a whole month, basically like you get for spring. So mm-hmm. I think the ideal scenario would probably be like a mid-July timeline for when it to start. I don't think they'd give a full month to make up for a full spring. Because some team, Vanderbilt, South Carolina in the SEC had already started spring practice. So how does that weigh into any decision that the NCAA SEC make as far as some schools had already got a spring practice, they went on spring break and didn't get to resume? Do they consider any kind of competitive advantage for the teams that had already started spring practice? I think that's something to kind of really look out for as well. But I'd look for an early to mid-July starting time to give teams an opportunity to make up for spring. I don't know what that does for teams. I don't know it's definitely an advantage. I just don't know if it's as big as an advantage you would have got from a full month in spring and then having time to assess all that in the off season from what the guys did in the 4 weeks that they would have got in March to April. So, but that's the way I see it. I think recruiting starts back in earnest, full bore, maybe before June, but I think full time, the way we know recruiting now, if everything goes well, beginning of June and spring, and then start fall camp a little earlier to make up for spring and early to mid July.
Yeah, I'm just going to hop in here real quick. I don't think that, you know, the NCAA, we've become so accustomed to them dragging their feet when it comes to critical decisions like this. I mean, we were sitting here last year talking about how long the waiver process took and how there was no transparency and how some guys would get approved and, you know, everything that goes on with that. To think that the NCAA is going to be capable of making huge decisions about scholarships for thousands of athletes from, you know, 40 plus varsity sports. I mean, there's only 19 varsity sports at the University of Florida, but some places like Ohio State have what, double that amount when you count in all the pistol shooting and synchronized swimming that they care about up there. I mean, if you're going to really going to go back there and give scholarships back and everyone, it's going to be a nightmare. You've already seen the reports of it coming out. I think if anything happens, you know, one, you made a great point there about Vanderbilt, Dave. You know, if any team loses to Vanderbilt this year, and they better be ready to blame the fact that the Commodores got a few extra spring practices. That better be right there in their excuses chamber. But I think if anything is likely, I think we see a change in recruiting. I think that we are, you know, we're so accustomed to having just one signing day anyway. I think if anything, the NCAA will go back and say that clean slate for everyone. If you took an official visit off the table, everyone has five official visits, and there's only going to be this February signing period so that everyone has a chance to kind of catch back up, because they could also see if that does, you know, I'm with you, Dave, that I hope that it's June, you know, July 1st, the SEC, Greg Sankey today came out and said that they fully expect everything to be back on track and that SEC media days for July is going to be on track. They don't anticipate any, you know, delays right now, but if the season does get pushed or anything like that happens, or fall camp gets pushed back or anything happens, I think it would benefit everyone to have just that later signing period. Coaches have said that in the past it's much easier to navigate. It does put a whole lot of pressure, like we all know, on just one day, but I think it is a change that the NCAA would be prepared to make, because everything else sounds a little bit too drastic and outside of their realm of handling. I wish I had more faith in them to do what's right and stand by the athletes and, you know, give them the extra scholarship, because as everyone out there knows, you only get one shot at this. You only get one time in college. Why not give them an extra year to realize those dreams? Because we see redshirt seniors every single year change their pro stock or go get that master's degree that they've coveted. So I would love to see that happen. I'm not as optimistic because the NCAA has let us down so many times.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Before Zach jumps in, I'm going to be selfish and a Gator fan. Enemy is going to come out. With Florida already having 14 commits, I'm all for early signing day.
Oh, Zach, yeah. What are your thoughts?
I do think that you could see the recruiting calendar get adjusted. But as far as if they would be able to sneak in some type of spring/summer ball. I mean, it's kind of what it would be. I think the biggest thing that it would have to be considered is how that works in terms of their bodies recovering between whenever that date would be in fall camp. Do you then have a shorter fall camp or a date that gets pushed back because of that? And if they do have some type of spring workouts, is it, even if it's something like only like a week and they have a really minor scrimmage, obviously nothing for fans, is that still something that they can make happen? I mean, that remains to be seen. I definitely think it would be beneficial as long as it doesn't, you know, put any players at risk and they get the necessary time that they need to recover. But, man, I'm just hoping we get football this fall. Like, I don't care. Like, whatever happens with recruiting and, like, whatever dates get worked out, like, man, just please let football happen, because the thought of that being affected and this thing dragging out all the way to then is just, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, I agree, Zach. We're gonna play Angel's Advocate, like you said, and we're going to assume and hope for the best. There's a lot of things that you guys talked about, and so I might go on a little bit of a diatribe here, but hopefully I get the question answered quickly. So a couple of things that I would do, assuming that, Dave, your calendar said that we're good by, you know, early June to start traveling again, is I would set up, you know, probably 2 to 3 junior days that can happen during the summer. I know that they usually use those times for camp and travel and everything else, but, you know, I think it's only fair for these guys To be able to get the opportunity, because this is, you know, this is a chance for, you know, when we had Charlie Skolinski on, who's the director of U.S. player personnel, he said that, you know, before UF will accept your commitment, for the most part, I'm sure there's some players that's a little bit different for, you have to perform at camp, right? So whether that's a Friday Night Lights, whether that's, which is, you know, up in the air now. Whether that's a spring camp or you know, whatever that might be, you know, you need to get those guys on campus. You need to be able to evaluate them. It's tough to evaluate just simply on tape alone. So I would definitely add, you know, some additional days. One of the things that I would make as kind of a one-time chance is I would up official visits and allow these kids to take more than 5 official visits. I don't know what that number is, maybe 7 or 8, and I know that that's a cost back to universities, but you know, that's an opportunity for these kids where they would normally spend some time during the summer traveling to, you know, a bunch of different campuses that may not have that opportunity, or, you know, during the spring, I may not have that opportunity to let these kids be able to get out and visit some other places. I would also cancel early signing day. And I know that, Dave, you just mentioned it, Florida State, you know, pretty well. But, you know, I almost don't think it's fair for these kids that, you know, if they really didn't have the whole opportunity to be able to scour the country and find the best place for them. Because, you know, Zach, you mentioned it, you know, as well. This is a lifelong decision. You know, this is a commitment that most of them, or some of them at least, will, you know, live with for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. And so you want to make sure that they're making the right decision. And as selfish as it is, because Florida sits in, you know, the number 1, number 2, number 3 recruiting class in the country right now, you want to make sure that you give these kids, you know, the opportunity. But there's 2 things that I wanted to talk about that you guys all brought up. And number 1 is the cost, right? And that's one thing that, Graham, you mentioned that you don't trust the NCAA, you know, and I would love the NCAA to give these kids an extra year. I'd love to give an extra year to everybody, not just the ones that are seniors or the ones that are missing out, but everybody. But that leads to 2 big things that I just thought about. So number 1 is the cost, right? University of Florida doesn't have much of an issue when it comes to dollars. You know, a lot of your big state and a lot of your big, you know, programs that Florida's competing with, the SEC, et cetera, they're not as worried about cost. I think they gave out $45 million just from the SEC network alone. I'm worried about your smaller schools. I'm worried about your private schools that are already operating on shoestring budgets, the schools that are already, you know, taking these games that, you know, they're going to get walloped just so they can make $1 million or so they can make $750,000. What do those schools do if they now have to carry 100 scholarships instead of 85 for football, or if they have to carry an additional 200 scholarships because we're going to allow spring scholarships to roll over, right? So there's definitely an externality there that I wonder how the NCAA is going to help mitigate, you know, for some of these schools that may not afford it. And then another issue that I just thought about that just passed the Florida Senate, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with this coronavirus thing, if it still passes, etc., but you have a likeliness issue that's now coming up in 2 years where players are going to now be allowed to be compensated on their name and likeliness, or name and face, right? So, you know, that's something that a kid that is a sophomore now may have graduated by the time that that goes into effect, may now have an extra year that schools are now have to figure out how are they going to now be able to compensate these kids. So there's a lot of other things that go into this other than just, you know, the fairness of, hey, we need to give these kids an extra shot. So I'm curious to see, and I have zero faith, like you, Graham, in the NCAA to figure it out in an effective manner. But there's a lot of externalities that come from this situation beyond just, you know, what do we do with the recruiting calendar?
Yeah, the scary thing, Zach brought it up, and Silk, you know, while we were talking about notes earlier, sent this. I mean, the possibility of having no games at all this fall, that's a scary proposition for us who love Gator football, love talking Gator football, love putting stuff out there for listeners and followers out there of Gator football. I mean, there is a legit chance that we do not get a football season this fall.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
I'm not ready to accept that. My world is that we, as a country and as a world, will figure it out. Hopefully, close Clearwater Beach, close South Beach. Yeah. Let's get these kids inside, watch some TV.
I mean, listen.
It was funny. I definitely think that everybody – how they want to spend time inside and cuddle up, sleep, and watch Netflix. This is your perfect opportunity. What are we doing?
Exactly.
You know, we're out getting crazy on the beaches. Come on.
If you want football in the fall, stay inside.
Yeah, Patrick Simpson said it best. You know, if you told everybody in the South that if you stayed inside for the next 7 or 14 days, whatever it was, you'd have football in the fall, everything would be shut down for 14 days.
Exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, our normalcy has changed for the time being. But guys, I know we're getting this thing together. For everybody out there, you know, there's not whether you're holed up in your house or you know you're away from work or all that. Of course, we'll put out a Gator panel for you to listen to. So, guys, everybody, it was kind of short notice. We threw this together just because we knew Gator fans needed something out there to get them by this time of year, trying to get their mind off of everything else. I know a lot of the topics here dealt around this coronavirus, but you know, maybe. For an hour, a little over an hour here, you know, gave you some type of escape there.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm glad definitely that we did this, and it's I think it's been boring for everyone. So the fact that we could get together and just talk about this stuff and give fans something to listen to and look forward to, it's awesome. And you know, hey, we're all in this together. We all want to see this thing get over with, and everybody just got to wash their hands and stay away from each other.
Yeah, I want to see you guys in Atlanta in July and in the Swamp the first game of the season.
Oh, yeah, likewise. And if it seems like we talked about a whole lot of just bad stuff, I mean, I think we talked about everything bad that you possibly could talk about for a program that has signed the number 8 recruiting class and just finished number 6 in the country and returns, you know, their starting quarterback. I think we hit on every single negative. So in terms of, you know, my media checklist, I think that I did a pretty good job making sure that I hyped up all the negatives today.
All right, anything else, Dan, Zach, Graham?
No, it's always a good time to be good, on. Man.
Thanks for having me, guys. The great stuff. Yeah, I miss football. Bring it back.
Yeah, I was supposed to see Dan Mullen last night in Jacksonville, so, you know, this it ruined all that.
Well, gentlemen, we'll have to do this again soon. It's always good to chat with you guys. For everybody, it's
Aiden
and Gale, Gators Breakdown, Locked On Gators, and Gainesville Sun. We appreciate it.